You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and it is the something like the 24th of April, 2024. And I've been asked to deal with the public policy issues in the American Congress concerning funding for Ukraine. And it was on just a few days ago, the 20th of April, where the House passed a bill to give another something like $61 billion in aid to Kiev. It's expected to quickly pass the Senate, and someone will help the unelected president sign it. But as anyone who listens to me or anyone with any common sense, none of this is going to make a bit of difference. It won't make any difference to the war, as far as action on the ground is concerned. New military hardware, first of all, needs competent crews. It needs integration with a broader strategy, integration with the other branches of the armed forces, and there has to be this cadre of trained professionals who knows how to do all of that. And of course, since none of that exists, they could send whatever they want over there. Now, it looks like most of the military hardware that's funded by this $60 billion has already been produced, but there's some technicalities here. It seems that maybe $8 or $9 billion will be dedicated to new weapons and equipment. But, you know, again, this is symbolic. It could be $100 billion. It doesn't make any difference. So this $61 billion is subdivided. About $20 billion will be used to pay the American military-industrial complex for things that have already been done, weapons that have been produced and delivered, and some things that haven't been shipped or are in the process of being shipped. And, of course, there's some more for things that haven't been produced yet. That breakdown hasn't been made clear quite yet, and that's open to revisions as time goes on. And most of these weapons, anyway, are not going to reach Ukraine, as we already know. And then there's some, I think, depending on who you read, $3 or $4 billion to run the Ukrainian government. Ukrainian government is a colonial system. There's no money in Kiev, as I've been saying for many years, and the U.S. has to pay for the government to function. So I've been saying, and you know, this bill makes it explicit, there is no Ukrainian government. They're just simply Ukrainian and Yiddish speakers in Kiev who work for the Americans. And of course, some of this, and this goes to the Pentagon, comes down to paying advisors and mercenaries over there. At least there's some people who can train. They better be bilingual or trilingual, which I don't think they are, to go over there and train Ukrainians and how to use this stuff. The Patriot missile systems, these are mostly symbolic in the sense, in the vulgar sense, that they don't exist. But there also is, and a few authors have noted this, there is a second bill that is not talked about, meaning it's sort of semi-secret, didn't get much attention. That's a very different story. The second bill provides maybe $300 billion. Directly from the American taxpayer, and some of it, I guess, from NATO. And much of this is sitting in European banks in Brussels. So the $60 billion is really just a very temporary measure. point is to keep Ukraine afloat at some very rudimentary level until the fake elections in a few months in the U.S. There will be no elections in Ukraine. It's a one-party state anyway, which is quite democratic, according to the United States. But there's also the question, now you have two bills, one discussed, one that's not, and then this claim that the Russians should be brought to negotiations. Not that any of this is Washington's business, but the demand to freeze military operations will be made clearly because the war is from a shooting perspective largely over and has been for a very long time. But to think that Russia is going to fall for this again, this let's negotiate and suspend fighting, this has occurred before. This occurred in 2015 with the Minsk, or the second Minsk treaty, where peace was just used to rebuild Ukraine's military force. And of course, Angela Merkel and others have said that that's exactly what that was. And then don't forget the Istanbul peace negotiations in April of 2022, which I neglected to cover because I didn't take them seriously. This is why the Russians withdrew their forces for a while, and then they were quickly broken off. And then NATO ordered Ukraine to launch an offensive. That was about the last time they could do anything like this. So this would mean this is a third time the Russians are expected to fall for this peace idea. Now, again, I put zero stock in American politicians. There's this hack, this kid, Mike Johnson from Louisiana, the House Speaker, who radically changed his opinion on the aid money. And is that there's actually been speculation as to why this has been the case. But we all know why. There was massive lobbying efforts this month and at the end of the previous month from U.S. weapons companies. And they are deep into the Republican Party, as we know. And, you know, this $37 billion for weapons already delivered and in the pipeline was already being discussed. And that's a pretty major sum for a company even like Lockheed. But this lobbying effort did do what it was supposed to do. And they pressured Johnson to allow the vote. And it looks like the final vote was 310 to 111. You had over 200 Democrats joining this. And it looks like that the support for the military-industrial complex in the American House of Representatives is roughly 75%. Of course, that is not reflected in the broader American population, so that has to be explained. And my concept of the regime is the explanation. So this was, you know, essentially a backroom deal, Democrats crossing over to support Johnson. And especially in foreign policy, there is, you know, it's a one-party regime that's very tightly enforced by the media. But what the hell is $60 billion now? When I mentioned this second bill, that has not been discussed very much. And that's even more recent. And the second measure, as some of you may have noted already, the 21st Century Peace Through Strength Act, which is a quote from Ronald Reagan. And this, you know, they try to cram as much they can into a bill. They know these people aren't going to read it. Something like 200 pages. And it also includes the forced sale of TikTok to American oligarchs. Sanctions on China, which are always interesting because the U.S. is in a weaker position. The U.S. owes the Chinese government and Chinese firms huge amounts of money. I'm not sure how they could be pushing around their loan shark here. And it also rationalizes the $300 billion owned by somebody, but it's called, they're called Russian assets, brought to Western banks in 2022 at the outset of the war. And the Peace Through Strength Act rationalizes that and institutionalizes it. And so the transference of the seized funds to Ukraine That's the core of the second bill here. Now that $5 billion is just, you know, it's nothing compared to the $300 billion. Russia's economy is so robust, that's a rounding error. I don't know how much of that $300 billion or A is real, B belongs to the state, or C belongs to oligarchs somewhere. But 260 of that billion of that is in European banks. And it's not like the Russians are defenseless here. The other thing that this bill mandates is the creation of a Ukraine defense fund, and that $5 billion from the $300 will be deposited there, and liquefy any assets that aren't in liquid form already. And Europe may transfer its $260 billion, the remainder, into that fund, but that has to be negotiated. But since Europe is now mostly third world, and it's a satrapy of the Americans, it will, you know, it will certainly give in there. So this seizure of that money from quote-unquote Russia, this is how the U.S. will continue to finance this ridiculous war. And it's another means of buying time before the fake elections. Political office holders, as you know, who've listened to me for a long time, they don't matter. Both sides, without any knowledge or understanding, irrationally continue to support this war, despite the fact that their constituents don't. Same thing for the Israeli issue, or even the Chinese issue. The Chinese sanctions, you have a list of things in this bill that's not going to be read. Pieces of it may be discussed. It's being forced through. And this is how law is made. Of course, I've been talking about this kind of thing, the complete uselessness of sanctions on the Russian economy. I mean, since the Obama administration. I mean, you have oligarchs in the UK that are already talking about transferring that $260 billion of that $300. I know that doesn't add up to $300. I think $300 is just a rounding. Transfer it to this Defense of Ukraine fund. The Russians, of course, will and should seize at least an equal amount of European assets that still remain in Russia. You have to realize how many billionaires have taken a bath here. I said, although I was iffy about it, that it's going to be very difficult for Germans to pull out of Russia because they were so heavily invested there. Well, it's not as if they're being compensated, which means you still have plenty of plants in Russia. And they're going to be in serious trouble entirely because of this seizure. Stealing this money is a huge mistake, even from the American point of view. But sanctions, it stimulated the Russian economy. You know, the Russians have so much spare and excess funding, they've easily made up anything lost and simply shifted its trade to the south and east, which was happening anyway. Having Western companies leave Russia just means that you have Russians that'll take their place. You've had 15 of these packages of sanctions. Oh, by the way, if you're part of my Patreon group, please join it, because I have a lengthy paper on the nature of sanctions and what they are, and to the extent that many of them are even real. Because there's legally speaking, they're very iffy things. They're mostly media symbolism. I don't know how they can keep adding sanctions where pretty much, you know, by now, over 2.5 presidents, there could be anything left to sanction. Now, I don't trust the numbers, whether it be on the Russian economy or the American economy, but Russia's GDP has risen substantially, far outstripping estimates, both domestic and from the World Bank. Huge expansion of manufacturing and services, where, of course, Europe has fallen into the third world. 10% wage growth, where, of course, the only group that's growing in wages in America are attractive young women, who now make up 75% of college students and about the same proportion of those with outstanding student loans. Russia has increased its military spending, something like 70, the equivalent of $70 billion to $85 billion, a drop in the bucket compared to what the U.S. is spending, even as a proportion. You don't have any debt there. I mean, you have a short-term debt, but everyone has short-term debt, but not like the American debt. Gas, of course, is very cheap. And because the economy is growing, you do have interest rates and inflation that are going a little bit higher. But that's easily made up for. The latest thing, of course, is a $300 billion. But that's easy for the Russians to make up, even if they wanted to. It's seen, of course, as a desperate act, and it is a desperate act, if you have to steal. But there's been plenty of people, though, mainstream people, who have warned against this. I mean, you've had regime members, you know, heads of banks, that stealing this money will undermine the faith in the U.S. and the dollar in general. No one wants to put their assets, especially in the third world, in Western banks, especially in Europe, if it could be stolen if they disagree on something. And the U.S. has created a secondary sanctions regime, which is going to be very hard to enforce, if they're enforced at all, for countries that refuse to abide by American sanctions. And, again, China is clearly in the crosshairs here. But BRICS have provided the third world with an option. The battle in Niger, as I've talked about before, is a big part of this. So all this is going to do is increase the instability of the already unstable American empire economy. The ignorance in Washington that I've been talking about for decades is now undeniably showing itself. There will be blowback from this seizure. The government is paying now, as we've been predicting for a long time, the majority of the budget going to interest payments. When you're talking about debt that is hardly even able to be calculated anymore. As far as American imperial interests are concerned, this seizure of the $300 billion is a massive mistake. And you'll see, I think, an already accelerating exodus of the third world from the American empire, financially speaking. And that, of course, can do nothing more than undermine the American economy, the domestic American economy. Some of you may have come across, I found this on the Center for Research on Globalization. Bill Kristol, who I thought was dead, but unfortunately he's not, has created a new group with elite money, of course. Kristol is definitely a regime member, you know, the Bilderberg type. I haven't seen the ad, but as Republican support for Ukraine continues to wane, apparently he's created a new group called Republicans for Ukraine, which is a part of Defending Democracy Together, which is Kristol's group. I think recently the CNN poll was that 70% of Republicans were opposed to Congress granting more aid to Kiev. It says in the ad, quote, "When America arms Ukraine, we get a lot for a little. Putin is the enemy of America. We've used 5% of our defense budget to arm Ukraine, and with it, they've destroyed 50% of Putin's army." I'm not so sure that even normies will believe that. Interestingly, it doesn't try to frame this as a matter of defending democracy or any nonsense. Then the ad says that the more Ukraine weakens Russia, the more it also weakens Russia's closest ally, China. America needs to stand strong against our enemies, and that's why Republicans in Congress must continue to support Ukraine. And it's typical Bill Kristol. His whole life is a virtue signal. His whole life is a defense mechanism. Lloyd Austin said the same thing early on. Weakening Russia, although no reason is ever given, you have the imbeciles, Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, who, by the way, who got 5 deferments for Vietnam while later claiming to be a veteran, also is even though he's a Democrat, is a part of this, saying that the U.S. was getting its money's worth because Russia is taking losses and no Americans are dying. That we know of. I don't think that's true either, but it's just you know, hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians. You know, I've said in the past how radically different, and this was in the very early months of my career, early college, where the Contra Sandinista Nicaragua issue was dying down. And when you compare the debates over the aid to the Contras versus aid to Kiev, it is night and day. And I'm the only one who's asking the question, why is it night and day? Reagan, in the early 80s, made overthrowing the Sandinistas a central aspect of his program. Of course, the entire thing is ideological. Since the war then was against the left, the regime opposed it, media and everything else. Now, since the war is against nationalists of one kind or another, whether Russian or, you know, religious nationalists, then, of course, the regime is fully in favor of it. There were no sanctions on the Soviet Union. The sanctions on Cuba were largely the stuff of myth. Apparently, public opinion, of course, was split over the Contra issue, even though there's no support for the Ukrainian issue now. But the toppling of the Sandinistas was a huge part of it, and the media openly backed the kind of semi-Soviet state with zero opposition. So then Reagan had to do a secret war, a covert war, to bring down the leftist government right after taking office. But that clandestine aid, and had to be secret, became public. And then the media invented stories about how evil the Contras were. They were murderers and drug runners. Rumors were created. And then the Boland Amendment passed, prohibiting the funding of the Contras, which by itself is a huge problem. That was in 84. The result, of course, eventually was the Iran-Contra scandal, which is nothing compared to the level of corruption in the Ukrainian case today. Reagan had to create a whole media onslaught to convince people to support the Contras, saying that the Cubans are instigating revolution all over Central America. And, of course, this was true. These weren't claims that Reagan made. And his only victory was a $100 million package, mostly humanitarian assistance, to the Contras. And it's from that victory that they created the Iran-Contra scandal. Again, nothing compared to the corruption in the Ukrainian case. So they had lost the $100 million battle, and so they created something else. Of course, Iran-Contra was a strictly Israeli matter. It was at the behest of the Israelis, and it was connected to the Iran-Iraq war. And in all the discussion, this is, of course, pre-internet, of the Iran-Contra scandal, it was pretty rare to hear Israel's name mentioned. So there was allegedly illegal arms sales to Iran at the behest of the Israelis, because they wanted, you know, they wanted to keep that war going between Iran and Iraq. And the profits, the weapons were bought from Israel, and the weapons sent to the Contras in Nicaragua. Well, of course, the final analysis is not a whole lot of money was raised. The Boland Amendment didn't deal with private actors, and certain agencies were allowed to deal with this. And there was a peace plan. And when I first got into this field in 1990, that's when the elections were held that humiliated the Sandinista state. And, of course, the regime tried to disrupt and discredit this. So what's the difference? You consider the difference between the Contra aid and the Ukrainians. The Contras are even closer to home. The only difference is that the Contra issue was against the left. The Ukrainian issue is against Russian nationalism. It's ideological. It's always been. And it's really the only substantial difference between the two debates. The regime is inherently leftist. And Russia's anti-liberal positions are the only reason that it is targeted. Because, of course, it has tremendous economic ramifications. Of course, many in the U.S. government opposed the expansion of the Soviet empire, as it would any empire, but trade with it was constant and profitable. No sanctions were ever levied on it, except by the Carter administration after Afghanistan. The regime was opposed to the Cold War, which is largely the stuff of myth. Again, the situation in Ukraine is far worse than it ever was in Nicaragua. Since the regime favors it, it doesn't make any difference. Come across another piece on the mobilization issue, where reserves are gone in Ukraine. Military wants troop rotation at the front, which I've been saying for 6 months is impossible. It can't be done. The pro-Russian Prime Minister, Mykola Azarov, who was overthrown actually by the Maidan revolution financed by the U.S., is talking about this mobilization issue and how desperate Kiev is. There's an alarming lack of manpower in the country. And of course, that's, again, I've been talking about this for a long time too. Let me quote Azarov on this, and he is an authority on these things. Mobilization in Ukraine has turned into a nightmare for Ukrainians. Ukraine's reserves have been emptied, while at the front, the military is asking for a rotation of troops, which cannot be done due to a lack of personnel. Thus, as long as Ukrainian authorities use violence against their own people, there'll be fewer and fewer supporters in the country, and fewer volunteers will appear in the ranks of the Ukrainian forces. This means that with such sentiments in society, Ukraine has an extremely low chance of holding its own. Mobilization resources, the draft, now is getting more and more desperate because the manpower is completely exhausted. And it's not just from casualties, it's from fleeing the country. New laws have been imposed. Ukraine's been under martial law since the war began. And that's when, of course, the first general mobilization order was decreed, which meant that males between 18 and 60, initially it was 50, but then it was raised to 60, were not allowed to leave the country. And as time went on, the prison sentences increased. Now I think it's 5 years maximum for evading military service. But these are being violated all the time. A great author wrote that the summons method, you know, a written document that has a person's name on it, they're being violated all the time. They're prepared in advance, and if it's properly issued, the conscript is conscripted. It can't be delivered by things like text or email. It has to be in front of the physical person. But you have such desperate measures like military recruiters hiding inside of an ambulance. Of all places, they were hidden inside. This was in Odessa in January of last year. A bunch of recruiters hid inside of an ambulance. When they saw anyone of military age, they jumped out like a SWAT team, handed the summons, sometimes without a proper name on it. Didn't matter. They added that later, and then dragged anyone who resisted into the ambulance. I have so many videos now. Friends in Ukraine who've been sending me these things. Random guys who are being grabbed. There is, like, on March 20th this year, the taxi driver video, where he was accused of having insufficiently patriotic thoughts, which, by the way, is an actual crime. And then I think 2 days later, he was drafted into the army. I have video after video of Ukrainians being dragged off the street to fight in this lost war. Training is very poor. They don't know how to use this equipment. These men are being used as cannon fodder. I spoke of this quite a bit over the last 2 years. You have a complete collapse. If there was any morale, you have the total bottoming out. Can you imagine if this had surfaced about the Contras? The only reason anyone would join the military now is because it's the only place to make any kind of money. And of course, it's American money. They figure, well, we're dead anyway, one way or the other. There's been so many corruption scandals. Stephen Borisov using the money to defer conscription, you know, the bribes that you need to do this, buying property in Spain with this, taking bribes for exemptions. But there's no reserves, and no one wants to be there. And if they can pay a bribe, they're not going to be conscripted, which means it's only poor people. Now, this new law, new mobilization, the new draft law, will take a long time to be imposed. You don't have a functional bureaucracy there. But you do have military, and again, Odessa, I read this in Strana, threatened to abandon their position, even start fragging, killing officers. Already functioning military personnel wants to be demobilized. I mentioned there is no rotation. There was going to be a demobilization part of this bill, but it was removed. Many soldiers, and I have videos of these too, are saying that they will not go back to the front. One guy even said, I'll shoot if I have to. But these rich people sit in Parliament, but I've seen this on social media as well. Now, the New York Times has just discovered this issue. Of course, I've been talking about the desertion rate for, well, since the very beginning. Thousands of Ukrainian men have tried to flee, especially across the Tisza River into Romania. Thousands and thousands have arrived in Romania. They're willing to risk this. A lot of bodies have been taken out of that river. They'd rather swim than face the dangers. They're dead one way or the other in their minds. The New York Times says that there's been 2 years of bruising, bloody trench warfare. Well, that's not been the case at all. Russia could not lose in that case. Russia has been extremely careful and very slow, given their concern with civilian casualties, who are all Russians over there. So they're increasing penalties for anyone who evades. The casualty rate is so high, and even with a tightly controlled media there, people are realizing just how bad it is because a handful of men are coming back. Human trafficking is flourishing there. There were 56 specific criminal gangs involved in human trafficking, dismantled by the border guard and throughout 2023. The cost to be taken to the other side is about $10,000, the equivalent of $10,000. When you have a monthly salary of $450, that's a lot of money. I dealt with that in great detail. Just in the last year, they've at least reported 22 bodies taken out of the Tisza River, and many more drowned but never found again. And they're willing to take this risk. It's pretty, you know, it's a treacherous river. So there's zero chance of Kiev getting 450,000 men trained and ready to go. But even if they could, there's no morale. There's no motivation. And that means soldiers already at the front will start abandoning their posts, which they have already been doing. That's been going on for some time. So the new Russian offensive is really a mop-up operation. It will be unopposed, and it's made up of fresh and well-trained men led by veterans. So this ridiculous equipment, you know, Patriot batteries and everything else, has no bearing on the war whatsoever. But part of the new mobilization law is to keep these guys in the battlefield even longer, despite having few supplies and very little ammunition. So the oligarchy voted against demobilizing soldiers who've been there for a while, forcing them to remain in the front with no end in sight. So there'll be an even worse crisis in the army's ranks. I mean, the Rada, this is actually this month, which is just, you know, a one-party oligarchy, did vote against any concept of demobilization of men who serve more than 36 months at the front. The minimum that they can come home is February of 2025. So you see dissatisfaction everywhere. There was a border guard, Maxim Nismanov, Ukrainian State Border Guard service officer, who said on Facebook that this will be a total disaster. You can't promise demobilization and then take it away, he said. But it's not surprising. This new mobilization law is outrageous, even more outrageous than the one before. There's going to be a lowering of the minimum recruitment age, and the enlistment of women, the enlistment of the elderly, people with health problems. Because the U.S. forces Kiev to keep fighting, the regime, of course, won't ever allow it to surrender. There's no one left. These dumb Ukrainians in the U.S. who are also patriotic, they're advocating for the total depopulation of their own country. The American press is tightly controlled. By comparison, the Russian is not. And by comparison to the American, the Ukrainian is extremely tightly controlled. And they have this built-in excuse. All of these measures are extremely unpopular concerning a government that has 0% approval to begin with. The volunteers are long gone. It's only the fear of punishment at this point. And even there, it's going to be harder and harder to count on the police forces to enforce this. Everyone knows the level of lethality at the front line now. Many of them are resigned to the fact that they'll never see their families again, or they will rebel. This level of stress, I don't know, combat. I mean, I have been through an American divorce, which I can only imagine is similar to combat. But these high levels of stress, and no one really talks about this, leads to health problems for everyone involved, including PTSD. This is a very physical war. It's not trench warfare, as the idiots say, but there is a huge rebellion that's just getting started. The rumblings of the families, just like in the Soviet Union, in Afghanistan, families who haven't heard from their relatives in a very long time. It'll be smashed by the Americans. Increasingly, these very inexperienced commanders are becoming more and more critical against Kiev and, of course, the U.S. They're not, you know, and Kiev refuses to protect the interests of the troops. How can you expect officers to go along with it? This will just bring along this horrible collapse of Kiev, which never should have happened in the first place. Everything that's happened to Kiev is directly laid on Washington's port. This is a mass slaughter of Ukrainians for absolutely nothing. And people like Bill Kristol and, well, both parties will come up with whatever lies they have to come up with to keep this war going. And people don't really know anything. It doesn't really affect them directly. But even with that, it's still extremely unpopular. There's no connection anymore, if there was any, between foreign policy and the broader population. And in many cases, the broader population has to fight their wars and pay their bailouts. Anyway, thank you, everyone, for listening. And I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.